All right. We are back, and it is into the second hour now, and it is our pleasure to welcome back Kaylee Michelle to the Go-Go Radio Magic
Show.
And here, let me turn your microphone up a little bit.
Oh, thank you.
And so we already talked about it in the first hour that you're here because of your book. Mm-hmm. We keep screwing up the order of
butterflies, the zebras, moonbeams. I think we've said it three different times.
But we talked about how we've both read it this week and we both loved the book a lot.
Wow, thank you.
So we're really excited to talk to you about it.
Okay.
If you don't mind, there's two things I want to ask you about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go with this one first because, okay. Before you start talking about it, I want to see if what I imagined as I was reading
it. No spoilers, right?
No. I'll do my best to not have any spoilers, but, sort of about 2/3 of the way through the book.
Yeah.
There's a change.
Yes.
And the character, but even the writing style changes and
yeah.
how you use punctuation changes.
Right.
And so as I was reading it, and I'll admit I was somewhat confused,
mm-hmm.
but intrigued.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of those, like, I know this is going to unravel and open before me. So I'm going to just keep going.
Yeah.
And the conclusion I came to at the end was that this was a phase, that first part of the book, B, the main character,
mm-hmm.
She, while she was like a tough girl, she was also kind of naive and learning as she lived.
Yeah.
And that transition period, it was like the hurt that she had gone through, the heartbreaks, the loss.
Mm-hmm.
She was kind of now, she was more street smart, but just kind of the innocence was lost a bit,
yeah.
and she was also a bit lost and just kind of. So, can you talk? I know I don't want to spoil anything.
No. But I mean, like, if I was going to explain that to somebody who hasn't read the book yet or has read it and kind of was like, "What the heck just happened?" I guess I would say that. I mean, when you're listening to a song and it's got this groove and it kind of goes along, and then there is either like a disruptive bridge or just like a tempo change or something. I really kind of wanted to stay true to that musicality, I guess. And also, with being a very young musician, as B is in this book, I also wanted to really stay true to the idealistic big dreams that musicians have, right? Like every musician has these big dreams of being famous and going to LA and, you know, and what is success to a musician? Does it mean going to LA? Does it mean going on tour? And I feel like I just wanted to encompass that in a way that had to be fantastical and had to be almost like a break with reality, because so much of our artistic dreams is a break with reality, you know, whether we live it or we dream it, right?
Right. And there is a very dreamlike quality
yeah.
to it. And you're just kind of, it's like you're living your life in these fragmented moments.
Yeah, very much so, definitely. Whether that was in the first part of the book or in this weird, I mean, you could call it a dream sequence, you could call it whatever, but I mean, that's kind of what happened when I was growing up. I know it happened to a lot of my friends, just, and what I mean by what happened is that they were on a trajectory with their, you know, creative impulse, and then kind of you start to grow up a little bit and you start to take a look around the world and you're like, wait a second, this world is not equipped for my dreams. And so you can either take those dreams with you or you can kind of start adjusting your dream based on what the world is telling you you need to do. So
there is a great image, and if I'm not mistaken, but I feel like it's fresh in my mind, where B is explaining exactly that, like everything that's going terribly in the world, and she's trying to put on her lipstick.
Yeah.
And it becomes a, well, I guess she's just reminded of the.
Yeah, the reality.
Little things she's worrying about, or.
Totally,
right.
Totally.
Now, let's just lay the groundwork for the folks at home that have not read the book yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's the story of B, who moves to Montreal from the Maritimes.
Yeah.
To pursue music, mm-hmm. and she gets involved with a cast of characters of the local music scene, and it paints a very wonderful bohemian picture of Montreal, the good, like the nitty and the gritty, you know, all thrown in.
Yeah.
And it's her pursuit to figure out life.
Yeah. Yeah.
One thing I took from it was there's no sort of time attached to it. Like, I don't believe there's any year.
No.
It could be any time. A lot of the time when I was reading it, my mindset was like when I was probably her age. So to me, it was the 90s.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I really liked that aspect about it, like where there's nothing you can really pinpoint. And although it was Montreal, you've obviously taken liberty with venues and clubs and
yeah, a little bit. I mean, like, I did an English translation of some clubs that I really love, and also I really like, I personally find when I'm reading books, you know, I find it really, it's just, you really date yourself when you say stuff like, oh, I was scrolling through my iPhone, or I was, you know, adding a friend on MySpace, and you know, those things keep your book in a time capsule, and I didn't want this to be a time capsule. I really wanted it to be a book that spoke to artists wherever and whenever you grew up, you know, so that you could say, hey, I experienced this also. And you know, I really don't like reading books when they talk about their cell phones and stuff like that. You know, I am a victim of a cell phone. I use one, but if I could get around it, I would, and when I can, I do. So I can do that in books, and so I did. Yeah,
I definitely think that was very accomplished, because mm-hmm. if you know, like when anyone's reading a book in the movie that you start creating in your head, this could have been set in any time. Like it could have been the 80s, it could have been the 70s, it could have been last week.
Okay, good.
So yeah, it does have that feel that I think is very universal, especially for that scene mm-hmm. and people in scenes like that.
Yeah.
Now, it's clearly semi-autobiographical. Now, at what percentage would you say does the line between autobiographical and fiction, like where would you draw that? Is it...
Wow. I mean, I'm sure I'll be grappling with that question my whole life, no matter what I do. But I guess for this book, I mean, you know, this book was dedicated to my friend, Nathan Wilson, who did, kill himself. And I feel like there is a lot of, there's a lot of people in there that I want to remember and also pay my respects to, living or dead, you know, like the people who work at Lesko Griff and you guys and just people who have all gotten together to make this music community what it is. So in that sense, it's autobiographical. But there was also like a huge temptation to go back and edit. I wrote this book when I was in my early 20s, and it's the work of somebody who's in their early 20s, you know, and obviously I went back and did some editing for clarity and stuff like that, but being now, you know, 32 years old, I was kind of like, oh, wow, I really want to go back and bring my wisdom to this protagonist, and I had to really hold back because I think that part of the charm lies in the fact that this is a small world of a small character, and generally, you are kind of small when you're in your early 20s. You are confused and you're bumbling and you don't have a long-term plan. And so I think that was really important to keep it the way that it was.
Now, because, I mean, there's a lot of joy in the book, but there's also a lot of sadness.
Yeah.
Was that hard to sort of constantly go back to those sad moments or those?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I essentially started this book when Nathan died. And I was living in a band house in East Vancouver, and you know, times were very turbulent, we'll say. Just I didn't have a lot of long-term goals. I didn't know where I was going, and when I finally settled, if you can call it settling, in Montreal, and I revisited those memories, for sure, it was really painful to go back and remember what had happened, but also write it in a way that was not overly sentimental, and also write it in a way that did justice and was respectful of what had happened in a way that wasn't overly glorifying, or, you know, I just wanted to write it plain, you know, and say, this is what happened, and I was there.
Yeah, I think you really humanized all of the characters. Mm. And it was funny because I know Ian was talking to me, so he started reading the book before I did. And then he was talking about how everyone has these nicknames.
Yeah.
And so when I was reading it, but it is interesting how human, and it really is something that you do in the book when you really flip that and and you, I mean, they're always humanized, but they're almost, they're characters that you see at Lescaut Griff tonight if you were to go down there.
You would definitely see them there,
But there is a moment in the book where those nicknames, even with their nicknames, they really, the cartoonishness falls away, you know?
Totally. And I feel like that is such a part of growing up, is just being a goofball and a cartoon character and satirizing your own self and laughing about your poverty and your limitations. And then at some point you really hit this wall, and I guess that wall is growing up. And that's kind of when you realize that you can continue to satirize yourself, but at some point, if you don't respect or take yourself seriously, you'll never accomplish your dreams, you know? So, yeah.
Now, I wanted to talk about the, obviously it's a book about music scene and musicians and relationships. Mm-hmm. But there's obviously a relationship to music outside of the story in the book. You had mentioned that every chapter is a reference musically.
Yeah, there's tons of Easter eggs in there.
So could we talk about that a little bit? Like, were these songs or song titles chosen as a reflection sort of what lay in the chapter? Or was it more of a, this is what you envisioned a soundtrack in your mind would be for what was going on that particular chapter?
I mean, some chapters, like, for example, one is called We Only Come Out at Night. I'm not a huge Smashing Pumpkins fan, but I really like that song title. And I think that when you are, you know, 20 to 23, you really take Billy Corgan seriously. I mean, he is great.
Right.
Now, maybe not so much, but I really appreciated what he was saying at that time, for sure. And then there's just some lines that are so indelible, you know, like, standing on the corner, suitcase in my hand. I mean, come on. Like,
just going to bring that up because that was one of my favorites that popped up.
Totally. Yeah. And we've all been there, you know, and just that transient, oh my God, I've just come to the city and I'm young and everything is so exciting. Where do I start? And I love that line. So I feel like, there's some songs in there that are famous and then some songs that are more obscure, and I wasn't trying to do that on purpose. It was just like, this song in particular really represents the flavor of this experience. So, yeah, soundtrack kind of, but also just writing as I went sort of thing.
All right. Should we maybe play a track?
Yeah.
You've brought some music in. And
And we'll start off with the song where the book title comes from.
Totally.
Which is one of my all-time favorite songs.
Yeah.
And when I was a kid, it always reminded me of my sister.
Oh, yeah?
And specifically that line that you took the title of the book from.
Yeah.
So let's jump in with Little Wing from the Jimi Hendrix Experience, and we'll be back.
Okay.
Thank you. dumpling. There's something wrong with you.
Hey, this is the K-Man. Tune into CJLO.com on Friday nights from 9 p.m. to 12 a.m. for Beyond That Graveyard 3. And start your weekend the right way, always. You love it, you need it. Beyond That Graveyard Part 3 on CJLO.com.
Bellevue, that's it. I mean, sometimes you just ain't all there.
Hungry? Famished? Just looking for a snack? Food Services has you covered. Operating 9 locations across both campuses, including an all-you-can-eat dining hall on each campus, meal plans are available for all students and staff, some even including free coffee all year round. So visit concordia.ca/food for more information or to purchase the right meal plan for you.
Are you poor child? You ain't coming to me no way. I don't care.
We are back, and that was the last two tracks there were both from Kurt Vile, and we're going to let Kaylee explain the songs that we just heard there.
Well, I mean, the first one's a little bit self-explanatory, but Spaceman 3, my sister and I had started a band called Bat Palace. She's probably going to kill me for talking about this. It was really embarrassing, but anyway, we were really trying really hard to be cool, and so we started this band called Bat Palace. And so we were kind of
How old were you?
Old enough to know better. But anyway, so we got into this band. Well, we got into Spaceman 3, and we started getting into like Brian Eno, and we're like, oh, okay, this is what you listen to if you're cool. So, but then I actually genuinely got into Spaceman 3, you know, and I would, you know, turn off all the lights and, can I say smoke a J on the
You could
radio?
Say you took drugs to listen to music and take drugs to.
So I did a little of that. You know, I laid back and experienced the sound of confusion. I was like, wow, okay, you can do a lot with two chords and a lot of pedals. So then I started getting into that a little bit. And then, you know, Kurt Vile, I mean, man, oh, man, like he really spoke to me on a very genuine and vulnerable level. I think that album's called Childish Prodigy that those two songs are from. And
yeah.
I think that's so funny, you know, and he talks about that. He's like, Childish Prodigy, like, how clever is that? And it's like, yeah, it's clever, like, for sure. But, like, also, I feel that, you know, that childishness and that, like, that wanting to transcend that childishness.
Yeah. I think the only image of him on his albums where he's got short hair.
Yeah, and I think he's like, yeah, he's like sitting on a rock or something.
In a tuxedo?
Yeah. it's beautiful album art. But yeah, I felt like his whole thing was all about like simplicity and reverb and sincerity. And I thought that was really cool. So yeah.
I just lost my train of thought. I was about to say something and then something flashed over here.
that technology is really distracting.
No, it was about the thing you were talking about with his with the pedals.
Yeah.
Because in the book that comes up, right?
Totally.
With Bea when she's trying to find the courage to get on stage, and then and just getting up there with just a guitar and her pedals. Mm-hmm. And so now I was lucky enough to see Gentle Mystic when you played at Kaza.
Yeah.
When was that? Like a year and a half ago? A year ago?
Something like that, yeah.
So I know this is a little bit off topic from the book, but now was that pretty much is Gentle Mystic, like, do they share, does
For
Butterfly
sure. I
mean, and Gentle Mystic share that?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, and here's the thing about that. I find, and very talented guitar players might deride me for this, but I found personally that I did not have the technical skill to do what I was hearing in guitar players that I loved. So pedals really helped me out a lot because it wasn't that I was hiding behind something. I'm not the Edge, you know, but I also found that I really wanted to make all this beautiful noise, and I was limited with my acoustic guitar and the three or four open chords that I knew. So I loved to have this huge wall of sound. It made me feel very courageous. And so I definitely wrote that into the book because I feel like anybody who is a little bit crowd shy might rely on a bigger noise when they perform. So that was kind of where I was coming from with that.
Well, like the moment in the book, and I won't elaborate on it too much, but where B, I don't know if she states it to someone or if it's an inner monologue, but she says something to the effect of, I'm a writer who knows
how to play the guitar.
How to play four
yeah.
chords or whatever
right.
it is.
Yeah.
And to me, there was a realization there that this is sort of the dividing, like she's...
Well, I feel like when you claim the identity of a musician, people expect certain things from you. They expect you to have a technical skill that you may or may not have. They expect you to know certain albums, you know, like how dare you call yourself a musician if you can't shred like a jazz school virtuoso, you know? And so, especially as a girl, you know, people are like, oh, you play pretty well for a girl. So like there's that whole school of thought, which is another conversation for another time. But I feel like with a lot of that, you know, claiming the identity of a musician definitely comes with a lot of expectations. So it's easier just to say, you know, I am a writer and I play guitar on the side. And so, yeah, a lot of the way that I feel about my own identity kind of entered the book just because I could do that. So, yeah.
And now, and again, I'm trying my best to not give anything away because I really think people should get this book and they should read it. And I don't want to give anything away because it is a great journey to go through from beginning to end. And it's not going to take you forever. Like it's what, about 140 pages?
Something like that.
It's 157.
157. No. But it flows really well.
Thank you, and
it really is worth the time.
Yeah.
But there's so I don't want to spoil the ending or anything.
For sure.
And so we can't really talk about it.
But just as someone who lives in Montreal and who obviously, like, I have a connection to this book because it's talking about things that I'm interested in, right?
Yeah.
And maybe slightly as a reader, I'm living vicariously through these characters for experiences that maybe perhaps at one point in my life I would have liked, and now I'm happy to read it from a distance, you know?
Yeah.
But it's a great portrait of this wonderful city we live in. Like, music aside, I love your description of, like, physically the city, the changing of seasons, the summer versus winter.
I mean, I love autumn in Montreal, and I also love Montreal, so... Developers, if you're listening, please stop building condos. I love this city. I love everything about it. And, you know, we lost Cagibi. We lost Ivan Orange. Like, these are all institutions of our community. So I really, you know, if you're listening, stop. Just keep it the way it is.
Yeah, now record stores are in jeopardy.
You know, record stores are in jeopardy. You know, we have a beautiful thing here. And I think that people need to not take it for granted. Because if we do, we'll lose it. So... that's it.
Now, right away at the very beginning of the book, you talk about this jam space where all the bands have
which
their jam
space.
Which
has now been torn down,
yeah. Yeah, behind
The Bell Center.
Right, yeah. But in the book, it's behind the arena. And so I was wondering if it was, because we spent many an hour down there, so bands would come on here who had their space there.
Yeah, I had a space there. I had a lot of friends who had a space there. Yeah. I had a lot of friends who just hung out there. I got friends who got robbed there. You know, like, there was a lot of things that happened at that jam space.
And there were people who had studios in there as well. Like, it was a really big loss when that went down, because there was, it was kind of a lifeblood for a large section of the music scene.
For sure. I worked at a call center there once. I mean, it was just, it was a totally weird space. But I mean, if we let gentrification take over the city, we're going to lose our weirdness. You know, it will become sterile and it will look like a hospital. And that's just, that's not an artistic city, you know. And Montreal still is an artistic city.
I'm always happy when I'm at the corner of Mount Royal and Saint Denis, though. Because it feels like they've carved out that section, and it's, and it seems pretty.
That's our
at
niche
least
right
really
there.
Safe for now, anyways.
Long live Lesko Griff.
But also Rocket.
And Rocket,
Kida Broom.
Yeah, and Kida Broom. Yeah.
And then I haven't
been
there yet.
I think is still hanging on.
Right.
I think so.
And then is it Pow Pow? That's upstairs.
Yeah.
I have not been there yet, but
I've had friends. They've had some stories from there. They sound very intriguing.
All right. Well, can we get into the story about how the book came about? So you've already talked about how you started writing it at a very young age. And then, so what was the time in between? Like, when did it go from that to...
Well, I think like the most important thing that's not written into the book is, you know, this book is about this person trying to find a sense of direction. And that was very much me as well, you know, coming of age in Montreal, no direction, just kind of being a musician and rambling along. And then I kind of realized that, I mean, I'm a high school dropout. I didn't have an education at the time. And then I had all these stories and these books that I really wanted to write. And so getting into school was a huge turning point for me. So I was accepted into Concordia University just on my writing alone. I didn't have the prior education. And that was a huge blessing for me, just because it really turned my life around, literally. And so I got into school and I started, and I had this book, you know, and I started learning how to be a writer, essentially, in terms of like craft and technique. And I had a lot of really important mentors along the way, like Josip Novakovic. He really came to my aid, and he just was kind of like, okay, if you want to be a writer, this is what you got to do. This is who you need to talk to. This is how you put a book together, and this is where you send it. I had no idea. So that really was a turning point for me. And through Josip, I got my agent. And that was huge. My agent, Barbara Burson at Helen Heller, she's basically like my life coach, which is wonderful because I always wanted one of those. And she's great. She kind of turned everything around for me as well, just kind of, you know, through discipline and through these conversations that I've had with professional writers and agents and editors and stuff. It's really completely whipped me into shape, and it's made me a better person, I would say, you know. So yeah.
So can you just recall the moment you maybe received word that this was going to become an actual like physical artifact?
Yeah, I mean, I think I got an email from Palimpsest Press, and they were kind of just, they kind of told me it was going to become a thing. And then what was really important was Amy Dunn and Ginger from Palimpsest as well. She was my editor. They told me that they believed in the book, and that was really important to me, because up until that point, people just didn't get it. Like, I was sending it out to people, and they're like, I don't get it. Is it meant to be like just for musicians? Like, is this like a supposed to be like a? They didn't anyway. And so to have people be like, hey, I love Jimi Hendrix. I love that whole feeling of being a young 20-something person with these huge artistic dreams. I get it. And that was what made this the whole thing possible, because they understood. So, yeah.
All right. Well, we are running out of time, and we do have more music that you wanted to play. So we're going to jump back in with your music. But then I would like to come back, if we have time at the end, just to quickly talk about your next book. The deal has been signed.
Yes.
And and so we'll come back and we'll talk about that. But right now we'll jump in. Your next track that you have picked here is War on Drugs.
Yes,
so we'll go to that.
Very important. Come to the city.
All right, here you go. You're tuned into the Go Go Radio Magic Show right here on CJLO 1690 AM.
Hey, this is the K-Man. Tune into CJLO.com on Friday nights from 9 p.m. to 12 a.m. for Beyond That Graveyard 3 and start your weekend the right way, always. You love it. You need it. Beyond That Graveyard Part 3 on CJLO.com.
Bellevue, that's it. I mean, sometimes you just ain't all there.
Are you interested in comics? Wonder where all the movies come from? Already a fan of the genre but want to dig deeper? Vibrary Crossover Comics is here to help. From the most popular Marvel and DC comics to independent gems, we want to show off the variety that's available to you. Gaming and community are also important to us, with Magic the Gathering, Dungeons & Dragons, and book club events happening regularly. Plus, we're open 7 days a week, located near Metro Lionel Creux at 3560 Notre Dame West. Stop by for a visit or check crossovercomics.ca for more info.
Baby, happy nightmare, baby, 'cause you're mine, all mine. We're gonna go for a ride, gonna go for a ride down to the sea tonight. Gonna be my baby. Will you be my baby?
All right, we're back. And that was classic Silver Jews, Punks in the Beer Light.
R.I.P.
Yeah. And that song would have to go on a, if you were to make a CD or album compilation to go with this book.
I think they're now song, called Spotify playlists.
Right. But that song is perfect for this book.
Yes, I'm definitely a punk in the beer light all the time.
And so we are running out of time, and we knew that this would happen.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you wanted to say about the book that we haven't gotten to yet?
No, I don't think so. I'm so grateful to everyone who has loved it and responded to it and who's bought it and supported me. I think that is amazing. So thank you. Yeah.
And so what stores in Montreal, if somebody wants to go down and go to an actual bookstore?
I bought the last copy at Indigo last week. Maybe they've
and Saint Henry, restocked. Saint Henry Books in Saint Henry, obviously, and Argo as well. And I totally blanked there.
Drawn
and
Quarterly?
Drawn and Quarterly is ordering it in. Okay. So it will be in January.
And then I believe I got mine at the book fair that was happening at Concordia, and I happily bumped into you there.
That was Paragraph.
That was Paragraph.
Yeah, Paragraph also has it. And you can order it off the website, palimpsestpress.ca. So.
Sorry, say that one more time?
It's palimpsestpress.ca. So,
all right.
Yeah, there's a silent S in there, so Google it.
Yeah, we'll throw it up on our social media to make it easier for people to find it if they want.
Cool.
But it really is a great book, and it's perfect for a stocking stuffer. So
well, you know,
that's
there
all
you
I'm
going
to say. And you know, supporting local artists of all kind is really important. Sometimes I forget what we talked about on air and off air, but I think we were talking about the gentrification on air as well, right?
Yeah.
And the loss of spaces for artists.
Yeah.
And so it goes the same way. Like if you can support painters or writers or do it because they need support as well.
Definitely.
All right. I do want to just quickly talk about your next book that we talked about in the first hour. The deal has been signed, and you have do you know any?
Well, the book is called The One, and it comes out with Douglas and McIntyre in spring 2021. And it's basically about I had a spiritual journey that went awry in Los Angeles. I did not mean to wind up in Venice Beach, and there I wound up. So I spent 4 months basically in Venice Beach and, and wandering in the desert and just kind of hanging out in LA as one does. And it was a very unexpected experience, unexpected book. But I think people who like to wander will enjoy it, and people who don't want to wander but want to live vicariously will also enjoy it. So.
Awesome.
Now, does that LA story overlap the LA portion of this book? Or?
Kind of. I mean, I guess you could say they're in the same kind of universe.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's different characters.
Different characters.
So Butterfly is not in this one.
Right. The one is actually nonfiction. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And I realized earlier when I was sputtering on about, like, I don't want to reveal and I don't want to ruin, I didn't actually say what I wanted to say. And what I wanted to say was I loved the ending is what I was trying to get to without saying what the ending is.
Yeah.
But I really did love the ending.
Awesome. Thank you.
If you're tuned in, go this weekend, buy a couple of these books and hand them out at Christmas time, and you won't be disappointed. Now, we have a couple more songs that you've handpicked, but we're only going to have time for one of them. So I'm going to let you pick. You have Pay No Mind and Some Days. So it's up to you.
Wow. Okay. You know what? You should check on Pay No Mind by Beck, because this is an anthem, this one. This is great, you know?
All right. Well, thank you so much for trekking all the way out here in this freezing weather.
Oh, thank you guys.
And,
this is awesome.
And we look forward to having you come back in when your next book comes out.
I'll be here.
All right. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us this week. And come back next Friday and we can do this all over again.
This song too on the album. This is the album right here. From the album.
Tonight the city is full of morgues, and all the toilets are overflowing. There's shopping malls coming out of the walls as we walk out among the manure. That's why I pay no mind. Pay no mind.
rock and roll singer as he's dancing upon your paycheck. The sails climb high through the garbage pail sky like a giant dildo crushing the sun.